Honestly, when you were talking about the depth of your Husker dude-ness, I don't know if that's even a phrase, but I was thinking if I had like passed out or was unconscious and then you showed me one of those books, I would have been like, like I would have like taken that breath. Like I'd been underwater for so long and then you take that huge gasp of oxygen.
Hello world, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the big wheel generation who gave a hoot and didn't pollute.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving those books you stole from the library that educated you on all the things no one would talk about. Periods, wet dreams, masturbation, bras, divorce, drugs, body odor, and kissing behind the A&P market. We're talking about the coming-of-age classics that could only have happened in the Gen X era.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
To my love, took it down. I climbed a mountain and I turned around. And I saw my reflection in snow-covered hills till the landslide brought me down.
Welcome to one more emergency meeting of the Pop Culture Preservation Society during this summer of reruns. It's important for us to pop in this week for two reasons. One of them has to do with a book that will be released tomorrow, July 16th, which we will tell you about in a bit. And the other is because of a book that was released exactly 1 year ago. This week, I am celebrating the anniversary of one of the most important days of my whole life, which is the release of my first book at the age of 55, as you all know, Worldwide Crush. Which, I'm sorry, you've heard plenty about in the last year. I apologize.
I'm covered in goosebumps right now. I have goosebumps everywhere just hearing you
say that. It's a big deal. It's a big deal because it's a year I will never forget, you guys. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because of the love and support I've gotten from all of you, from my podcasters, from the listeners, the incredible responses I've gotten from readers of all ages, including you, the listeners of the Pop Culture Preservation Society. And I think there's one primary reason that this book written for middle schoolers has resonated with all of you. We're all here because of the childhood experiences that we hold dear. And Worldwide Crush deals with one of the most universal milestones of growing up, which is our first celebrity crush. This is one of the experiences that exemplifies our coming of age. And there's no doubt that I was influenced by the coming of age books that I read when I was in sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. These were the books that took growing up seriously. And for the first time, acknowledged that some of it might be awkward and scary and totally confusing. By the time I was 11 or so, I much preferred books that talked about the angst of growing up than I did a story about, like, a mouse or a happy family. God forbid, a happy family. Right, yeah. Was this your experience, too?
Absolutely. Those were the books I gravitated toward.
Yeah.
And kind of the more complicated and messy the situation or the feeling, the better. Certainly maybe more titillating the topic, the better. But that's just because we were all at that normal age when things were confusing and we were curious.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Kristen, like you said, the celebrity crush is certainly one factor of what we mean by coming of age. Because that whole genre is basically defined by the character, usually a preteen or a teenager, navigating that tumultuous abyss between childhood and adulthood and all the feelings and roadblocks and detours and wrong turns along the way, like, deep breath, periods, menstruation,
Menstruation.
Menstruation. That word always like stopped me cold when I was reading. Menstruation. like sexual awakenings and urges and the confusion and shame that often goes along with those things when you don't have anybody to bounce them off of, your feelings off of. Drugs. Suddenly, DARE means a whole new thing, right? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Racial, financial, familial issues and secrets the characters are becoming aware of and having to deal with and perhaps dealing with for the first time. Bullying and friendship issues. And we can't forget about the autonomy and the struggle that is suddenly present with parents.
Ugh. Yeah.
Parents, yes. Right?
Yes.
You guys, getting older is and was a lot. And thankfully, we had books to help us through that completely complicated time. Books like this, these coming of age type books.
Thank goodness we had those books because honestly, I think those were the guidebooks that helped us navigate all of those experiences you were just talking about, Michelle, because a lot of these topics are, we're not going to maybe feel comfortable talking to our parents necessarily, or for that matter, they might not feel comfortable talking to us. Yeah. There are some topics in there we didn't even know were a thing. Like this is the first time we're experiencing terms and what these characters are going through, which was so nice because, again, it's like this guidebook. It's like this is what's coming up. And when I get there or when I'm in a situation like this, I'll have a reference. I'll have some information on how to maybe navigate this. And as the rule follower that I am, I really wanted, I like when people tell me what I should be doing or what I should be expecting. And that's exactly what these books did.
Yeah, but also a guidebook. I love that term, but a guidebook that's not like a textbook, a guidebook that puts you
it's
in
not
the story.
Right. Yeah. It's real. It's real. Yeah.
It's real. Yeah. Like, and I also like what you said. I mean, the guidebook that answered our questions and helped normalize our curiosities and feelings, but about things that I sometimes didn't even know I was curious or had feelings about until I read the book. And then I was like, oh yeah, what is that?
Right.
And these were like people like us, characters who are our age, going through it instead of someone handing you something that's very technical.
Right, exactly.
I remember information coming from adults, whether it was in health class or church confirmation or something, and it would be some adult saying, at this time in your life, you might experience confusing feelings. You might feel something about boys or girls. That did not work.
No,
that was not working. Somebody that was prescriptive. That was somebody telling me what I was feeling. It was not an experience of a peer.
Right. I think that's the key experience of a peer. And if it wasn't you that you saw in some of these characters, it was maybe your friends or, you know, other people that you recognized in your life. Like this was the first time, at least for me, that I thought this reflected my life experience, whether it was, you know, a character moving. I was moving a lot.
Yeah.
But it was real people. I could put myself in those settings that these novels were.
And maybe it wasn't even, I mean, sometimes it was you, but sometimes, like you mentioned, it was people in your environment.
Right.
What if it was somebody from a different social class or a different economic class? What if it was one of the burnouts? Right? Think about the books of Essie Hinton. She was giving us a little a view into what their lives were like. And that was helping us have empathy for people and understand what their lives might be like.
And it's really the first time in history that there were books that were aimed at children that dealt with these topics. I mean, we were really lucky to be born when we were born, to have these so easily accessible to us. And really teach us a lot. I mean, it was my primer for so many things.
Yeah, because if you think about it, before that era, before our era of coming of age, I always come back to the Beverly Cleary book 15. Did you guys remember 15?
Do I remember?
And what a lovely book. I loved 15, right? About
Sister
a teenage girl's experience in the 1950s or the early 1960s. And it's sweet and it's happy, but it didn't portray any of the difficulties or the confusion or certainly anything having to do with anyone's body.
Oh, no. It wasn't realistic for us at the time. Yeah. I loved Beverly Cleary books like 15, or isn't there one called like Sister of the Bride? Mm-hmm. And
yes, these Sister types of
books. Yeah. Loved mm-hmm. those books in much the same way I loved Happy Days, or I loved the nostalgia of it, and I loved the whole, just the throwback of it. It mm-hmm. wasn't. It wasn't even in the same class as something right. like Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, or right. Then Again, Maybe I Won't.
But yeah. think about it. Right. When those books were written and consumed, there wasn't an option. Like, that was what you were right. reading about being that's 15. Right. And that's the impression you got. Like, oh, well, when I'm this age, I'm going to get married. And that's kind of what I'm, you mm-hmm. know, working up toward. That's the end goal. So we were really, again, the first generation to have these books that portrayed females in a little different light. And I think that was really important.
How much I gained, if I have to, I can do anything. I am strong. I am invincible. I am woman.
Believe me, there were so many people that were trying to stop those books because they don't want women to think that any of that stuff is actually exists. I guess I was going to say normal yeah. or okay, but no, they want to just turn away from it. And
well, remember
close their eyes,
the story
ignore
about,
it.
And I'm sure we've said this story in several different episodes, but it's just a good reminder of what you said of Judy Blume trying to donate a copy of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, to her daughter's school, mm-hmm. and the principal refusing it mm-hmm. because he didn't think it was appropriate for people to be learning about periods. And Judy Blume was like, what about the girls who are getting their periods? Would they not benefit from a book about periods?
No, because
and he was like, no.
Yeah, in the principal's mind, it's like, no, we don't talk about that. We don't.
No.
We right. don't acknowledge that.
Right.
We don't.
Yeah. One thing that was incredibly important to me as I was reading these books, I think the thing that was most helpful to me, instead of ironically getting the preview of what was to come, was the acknowledgement that people were confused.
Yeah.
Because that meant that I wasn't the only one who was in the dark. Mm-hmm. I really felt like, holy shit, everyone out there knows how to do all of the things. And I have no idea what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That mm-hmm. was one more way that we felt seen by these books.
Yeah.
In right. our confusion, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And our questioning.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. In a time we're kind of insecure about ourselves and our bodies and the way we're just processing life, just so many questions and that curiosity. This was probably the first time in my reading life that I experienced a character who was mirroring, in a lot of times, exactly what I was going yeah. through, for the first time for me to yeah. go, okay, I'm not, like you just said, Kristen, I'm not crazy. This isn't just me. Like this.
Right.
And that, gosh, is that not the reason that we read sometimes, is to see
yes.
ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for us, or for me, was really the first time I could almost exhale and say, oh, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And isn't that why we read and reread and reread these books? Because they were that lifeline for us.
Yeah.
We couldn't let mm-hmm. go of it.
Yeah. Even if they were dark. And uh-huh. I remember my mom being like, why do you read these dark books? Why do you want? She didn't understand why I wasn't just reading Pollyanna all the time. And some parents have difficulty understanding how the darkness helps you feel less insecure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
it's ironic.
Can I sail through the changing ocean tides? Can I handle the seasons of my life?
So the thing that started this whole conversation between the three of us was a list that I found on Goodreads. Goodreads is a website for readers where you can look for books, you can review books, you can make lists of books, kind of like a playlist, except with books. And someone had made a list called YA, YA stands for Young Adult, YA Standalone Titles of the 1970s. And scrolling through that list was like walking in the doors of my local library in 1979. The one I rode my bike to on the highway by myself. No
right,
helmet.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm fine. But I'm, yeah, it's, but no worries. I'm fine.
Stay clear of these books.
Yeah.
Right?
No, yeah.
Better stay
right.
Right. Books, but.
Get rid of these books. They're so dangerous. But go ahead and ride your bike on the highway with no helmet.
With no helmet.
You'll be fine. Yeah. Yeah. And we don't know where you are anyway.
That's
so
true.
The visual of these, of the book covers on this list, it was like a serial Husker Du moment.
Yes.
One after another. Books I hadn't thought about in 45 years, but books I knew intimately, even if I hadn't read them, because they were ubiquitous and so recognizable. Did you guys have that same experience when you opened that list?
Oh, 100%. Honestly, when you were talking about the depth of your Husker Dude-ness, I don't know if that's even a phrase, but I was thinking if I had like passed out or was unconscious and then you showed me one of those books, I would have been like, like I would have like taken that breath. Like I'd been underwater for so long. And then yeah. You take that huge gasp of oxygen because mm-hmm. it was like almost life-giving mm-hmm. in a way. The nipple lightning was just, it was a storm of it. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that.
So recognizable.
Yes. Oh, and the yeah. covers
friends,
and the fonts and
yeah.
like where those books sat, like the actual physicality of the books. And I remember like my nightstand or where it would be like sitting on my desk at school or in the Scholastic book order.
Yeah.
I could place it, not just the, you know, the storyline, but also the actual book itself.
There was a few covers that I don't think my eyes have seen since probably 1982, 83. And exactly what Carolyn just said, I felt like I was going to get teary and well up because all of a sudden I saw that cover and I was like, there it is. And I've ordered 4 of them on Thrift Books over the past few days. There, you guys,
I
Thrift
do too.
Books?
I
well,
do
they're
too.
Great. You
yeah.
can, and they're not, one of them, one is not going to be in the best condition. I think it said average, but it was like $3.25. I just needed to hold it in my hand again.
That's the thing. I just needed to see it in person.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Kristen, I know you're going to talk about one that just stopped me cold. So listeners, I'm going to let Kristen reveal that one. But the other one I ordered is called Taking Sides by Norma Klein. And if I don't know if you remember it, but the daughter, she lives just with her dad. Her parents are divorced. She just lives with her dad and her brother. And then her mom lives with another woman, which interesting. There is a book
and I remember reading that. I did not get that at the time. Lives with another woman. There, that meant nothing to me at
right.
all.
And I don't know. I mean, I can't wait to get that from Thrift Books this week again and read it to see if that's
right.
even
assumed. We don't know.
We don't know. Mm-hmm. A book by Marilyn Sachs called Class Pictures. And listeners, I'm going to put the covers of all of the books that the three of us are going to mention by title. I'm going to put images of all of the original covers of these in the Weekly Reader this week because we're going to see if you guys also get Husker Dude. But when I saw that cover, I couldn't have told you what the story was about, but I could tell you that I probably studied that cover for, 68 hours. And here's the one that just stopped me cold. I'm just going to show you guys the cover first. This is Mr. and Mrs. Bojo Jones.
Oh,
do you guys remember this?
God.
By Anne Head. Now, listeners,
yes.
Okay. Now, this was not on that list, Kristen. This is why you guys might not have seen
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah.
This book was actually published in 1967, but it found its way into Little Michelle's hands probably in about 1980, 82. And that book, Mr. and Mrs. Bojo Jones, along with The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton, is credited with launching this kind of coming-of-age genre in young adult literature. I did not see this, but there was a 1971 movie of Mr. and Mrs. Bojo Jones. I'm sure some listeners right now are going, yes, mm-hmm. I know, I remember it, with Desi Arnaz and Christopher Norris was a girl. She has blonde hair. Also starring Tom Bosley, Dina Merrill, who, if you guys saw her picture, you would
I
go, Love Boat.
Yeah.
You were on Love
yes,
Boat
yes.
a lot.
Yes, yes, yes.
Larry Wilcox.
Oh, my God, from Chips.
And Nicholas Hammond, from Sound of
yeah.
Music.
You know.
And
oh, what?
Sound of
yes.
Music and
Brady Bunch.
And the Brady Bunch.
And the Brady Bunch. There were a couple Sound of Music kids on Brady Bunch.
But Mr. and Mrs. Bojo Jones, if you guys remember, first of all, I love that title. I always did. That was like a forever type scandalous book for me
yes,
because they have sex on prom night, she gets pregnant, and then they get married.
Yes.
That's all I know about it so
tale.
Far.
This one was a cautionary tale, which differs from some of the other books we're going to discuss later. But there were so many that came out, especially in the late 60s and the early 70s, that gave you all of this scandalous content. But, oh, no. Mm-hmm. Then what happens? She gets pregnant.
Exactly. And the one that you're going to mention in a minute, Kristen, was another one of my all-time favorites. Mm-hmm. Carolyn, what about you?
Well, you mentioned Norma Klein earlier, and I don't even know that I knew she wrote this book that Husker Du'd Me when I saw the cover, which was Sunshine. So if you guys remember Sunshine.
The movie, yes. Yes. I had no idea.
I did not either.
No idea.
So sad. That cover, it's this black background and kind of like That's this right. oval, almost picture frame. And in it is a young mom and this little baby. And the font, again, those fonts, whew, they can just take you back. So that cover was so classic. And then the line on the front of the book that says, a tender story about what it's like to be young, a mother, in love, and dying.
Oh my gosh.
Right there. And then, of course, this one gets turned into a TV movie, which impacted me so much. And then we've got Sunshine on My Shoulders. John Denver, Let That Be the Song that played at the end. That was so tragic. That
was actually an adult novel that was picked up by teens. Like, it became popular with teens, I think, because of the dying mom.
Well, maybe. And because of Norma Klein, maybe.
And because of Norma Klein. Yeah.
And that leads me to my next book that threw me for a loop in so many ways. It's called Nobody Loves Trina by Phyllis Whitney. Now, Phyllis Whitney, my whole life, was a mystery author that my mother read every single Phyllis Whitney book that there ever was. There was always a Phyllis Whitney hardback from the library with the crinkly clear cover, those ones you can hear. And I just thought, and again, a font. There was a Phyllis Whitney font. So when I saw a Phyllis Whitney book, like in the Scholastic Book Order, oh my gosh, this was my chance. It was kind of like The Witch of Blackbird Pond. You know, it kind of had that. Yeah. I felt like grown up. I can have a Phyllis Whitney book too. And it's actually a good story. It's about a disabled girl who, sadly, when you read the descriptions back then, it said a retarded girl. So we know we've come a long way since then.
That was the word they used.
But with this great storyline of kind of bullying, but how she enjoys really these simple things in life. Anyway, it's called Nobody Loves Trina. So that hit me hard when I saw that, because that, talk about coming of age. I mean, I was coming of age. Like, I was an adult reading Phyllis Whitney. So that was an experience when I saw that.
And you were being trusted with a topic that was very adult.
And then I'll end with the classic that I can picture myself in the story. This was one that I was like right along with them, was I Know What You Did Last Summer by Lois Duncan.
Yes, Lois Duncan. Just,
that's a good one.
And she became such the queen of those books
in the
80s and into the 90s.
Yes.
Yeah, very, very much. There were so many of those.
And like Sunshine, a lot of them did get made into our made-for-TV movies, which, listeners, we have a great episode. It might be two, but anyway, we have a great episode of made-for-TV movies where we do talk a little bit more about Sunshine. Mm-hmm. Another one I did have on my list that Husker Du'd Me was The Best Little Girl in the World by Stephen Lavancron. And that is the movie. I was looking at it going, is it the movie or the book or the movie or the book? But the cover was so identifiable to me that I'm like, well, I don't know which came first in my life.
Yeah.
But I definitely read the book. And something like anorexia, you know, this is actually an interesting one, because we talk about coming of age and things we're all going through, like universally, right? Mm-hmm. We're all going to get our periods. We're all going to have sexual urges. We're all going to – but when it's things like anorexia, I was super drawn to stuff like that because
You didn't experience that.
I didn't experience that, but yet I was super curious about it. And I was also very sympathetic toward it. Yeah. I was not ever reading those books like with judgment or anything. And I kind of gravitated towards those books as well. So The Best Little Girl in the World is definitely one that was in my bookshelf.
And that's why Go Ask Alice was such a hit. Go Ask Alice was one of those books that got passed around and passed around and passed around because we were so curious about this drug addiction.
Yeah.
We didn't know about, was it heroin? I think it was heroin, recall correctly.
Yeah,
and it was by Anonymous, am I right? wasn't Go Ask Alice.
I don't remember.
Go Ask Alice? Okay, you would have to scroll through the
cover,
list.
I bet.
Okay. You would know the cover. It's black. It's just black and it has white writing on it. Go Ask Alice. And that's the kind of book, Go Ask Alice was the kind of book that even if you weren't a reader, you read Go Ask Alice. Because it was forever. Going around and it was, yeah, it was like forever. And it was, I guess you could put it in the category of titillating. You could put it in the category of cautionary tale. Mm. But it was also putting us in this category of what could happen. Be careful. Right. Our parents were all really worried about, well, they were worried about anorexia too. I felt like that was directed at me, like, Kristen, be careful. Kristen, be careful of drugs. Of course, has anyone ever in my entire life approached me with drugs? No, nothing ever. Mm-hmm. But what I remember in junior high, just like waiting for somebody to approach me at the bus stop and offer me heroin.
Yes, always. But we were ready. We were prepared, though.
Another book along those lines of what you guys were talking about was I Want to Keep My Baby, which then made into the movie with Marielle Hemingway. Yes. Same kind of thing, like imagining being like, you know, 14, 15 years, 16 years old and having this baby. And I love Marielle Hemingway.
I'm never going to leave you with anyone again. No way.
I totally forgot about that, Carolyn. I Want to Keep My Baby. Yes. And this was one of those things
that's like
where
the
you
title
didn't...
of an after school special.
I know.
They all are. That's what they are. They're all after school specials, mm-hmm. basically. And so many of these, you didn't know which came first, the book or the made for TV movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because
that's
oftentimes
true.
The covers reflected the made for TV movie. And I still don't know. Did they come out at the same time? Was it a simultaneous release? Like, remember Sooner or Later? Was Sooner or Later a book before the made for TV movie with Rex Smith came out? I don't know.
We talked about it.
That's one of those.
Do we know if it, I think it came out after, didn't it?
It might have even come out after. Yeah.
You, I don't know what to say. You take my breath away. Every song I sing, you're the music that I play.
The other title that jumped out at me so hard, and this is a book I never read, but this, it goes in the category of something that was so ubiquitous and everybody knew it. And please help me remember who wrote this. It might have been a Norma Klein book. My Darling, My Hamburger.
Paula Danziger, isn't it?
Yeah,
is it Paula Danziger?
I think.
Oh, that's what first came to me when you said My Darling, My Hamburger was Paula Danziger.
I can't even tell you what that book is about. But it became a part of my childhood. Okay, are we looking it up right now?
Yes, we are. But that is so, that one is such a, the title of that.
Oh, no, it's Paul Zindel.
Paul Zindel. Yes.
Okay, Paul Zindel. My Darling, My Hamburger by Paul Zindel. And that would be one of those books that was on a spinner at Snyder's.
Yes.
Right? Like you would shop for books at the drugstore on a spinner. That's where all of these books were. Could you find them at B. Dalton? Sure you could. But really, Snyder's was your go-to for these kinds of books. And again, I can't tell you what those books were about. I can't tell you what My Darling, My Hamburger was about. I have no idea.
It says it was meant to shock the reader into avoiding sex and unvirtuous relationships.
Oh,
it features attempted rape, toxic relationships, and abortion. Oh my gosh, I would have never thought that. I thought it was about a hamburger. Like a cute, like they go to a diner and they like to order
Somebody works at Burger King.
All right, I'm going to check that. Or I got to order that one from Thrift Books.
But this
too.
Is interesting because we're going to talk about two camps of books here as we move on. That really sounds like a cautionary tale. And we're going to be telling us, we've told this story before about the book Forever. We've talked so much about Forever in so many different episodes. And we know that Forever was written because Judy Blume's daughter came to her and said, Mom, will you please write a book about two teenagers who have sex and nobody dies?
Yeah.
Because every book for teenagers, though we loved them, it was a cautionary tale. You'll get pregnant, you'll have to have an abortion, it'll be a back alley abortion, then you'll die. And of course, who is the person that suffers? The girl.
Of course.
The boy doesn't suffer. The one instance where this got turned on its head a little bit is another Norma Klein book. Norma Klein, how many times have I said she was so prolific? But she really did.
Yeah,
did she write 100 books? I don't know. And she wrote them well into the 80s. One of them is called Mr. Saturday Nights. And it's about a boy who gets a girl pregnant, and he decides to raise the baby on his own, including taking the baby with him to Columbia University when he goes to college. So no more Saturday nights for you.
Is that a movie too? Did that get made into?
I'm sure it is.
I just feel like starring Rob Father.
It's like Schoolboy Father.
It's like Schoolboy Father with Rob Lowe.
I think I can see someone like walking through the quad at some college, like with a baby.
Backpack. I could be making,
Sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And all the girls
sure.
looking and being like,
yes.
Oh, that's okay. You know how we've talked about the Andy Gibb font? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can't everyone picture the Norma Klein font?
Yes,
the Norma Klein font. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because there's another list that is young adult standalone books of the 1980s. That list is very unfamiliar to me. Extremely unfamiliar. There are just a couple of titles that jump out. It is highly populated with Norma Klein books, but I was not reading those kinds of books at that time. Really, by the time I reached seventh grade, I was reading mass market paperback romances.
Right.
I was reading Belle the Plaine and Danielle Steele.
Provided to me by my mother, I might add.
Sure. I remember my mom giving me Evergreen by Belle the Plaine, and I really enjoyed that, especially the times when she's in the bathtub by herself. I was learning a lot about what you do in the bathtub
like
by yourself.
Thornbirds, I was allowed to read, and that was very controversial because, of course, I was Catholic. So this was like, whoa!
The Goodreads list from the 80s, that's actually where I found Class Pictures by Marilyn Sachs. And I feel like that author, Marilyn Sachs, when I saw it's like S-A-C-H-S. Yep. When I saw that, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I've read a whole bunch of her books because that name just seemed so familiar to me. But I agree, Kristen, even though I was only, I was turning 11 in 1980, those books that were all published in the 70s lived on throughout the 80s. And also when you had an older sister like I did, they were getting passed down to me. She was 3.5 years older. Yeah. So the ones from the early 80s, which Class Pictures is, definitely. And I would also argue that we've posted this on social media many times, and I know listeners love them, but you know the Sweet Dreams romance books? Mm-hmm. I was obsessed, and you guys, my mom just found all of mine, and she said, would you want all of those? I was like, would I want them? Those were not nearly as deep as some of these other ones we're talking about, but to me, they were coming of age because they were putting me in situations where, you know, the popularity plan, it's the girl who is, you know, wanting to figure out how she can be popular, but it was situations that I was actually experiencing in school, maybe the girl who feels less than or feels like all her friends are dating and she's not. And so to me, those books were a lifeline to me because they did help me feel seen. All of us who read them, we devoured them. My sister and I would get stacks of them at Christmas, and my mom would read them too. Isn't that funny?
That was the precursor to Sweet Valley High.
It was. Yeah, it actually was. Yeah.
The Stein girls devoured those books.
I actually had the Sweet Dreams romance diary and the sweet, you know, there was like a calendar and all that stuff.
Recently, I was visiting Michelle in Denver, and you guys, I was so impressed how seriously she takes the meals that she makes for her new dog.
It's true. Yeah. Our pup Frankie is a 2-year-old Australian cattle dog, mixed rescue. And since I imagine she probably ate nothing but weeds on the farm she came from, I want to give her the best and tastiest nutrition possible. And that's why I feel so good about giving Frankie Badlands Ranch. Actress Katherine Heigl, she's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation. She says she's seeing more issues with dogs' health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can to support any dog's health, their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs, and it's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And bonus, Badlands Ranch also supports the Jason DeBus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes, just like Frankie. And I'm here to tell you, Frankie loves it and gets so excited when she sees me reach for the bag.
We have a great offer that we are excited to share with all of our dog parent listeners. Go to badlandsranch.com/PCPS and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/PCPS today.
Hey listeners, it's Michelle, and I want to tell you about an online service that has truly simplified my life, saved me a lot of money, and helped me feel cute despite the battle I'm sometimes in with my 55-year-old changing body. And that's my clothing rental membership from Armoire, where I can build the perfect wardrobe with brands I love that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for me. Listen, my lifestyle is not fancy, you guys. I very rarely go to snazzy events, and a dinner out with my husband is typically a walk to our favorite local pizza place. But Armoire still has me covered. I can rent joggers. Oh, I love a good pair of joggers. When I signed up, I took a quick lifestyle quiz, so my online closet is constantly full of clothing suggestions that are perfect for me. Last month, I got the cutest floral dress that I wore with tennis to the botanical garden, and it was perfect. If you are ready to have your dream closet delivered to your door, you must try Armoire. You guys, I promise you'll never be without the perfect outfit for any occasion, no matter how fancy, ever again. And right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off your first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/PCPS. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/PCPS to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again.
I was just going to say about that 80s list. Again, I wouldn't say Husker Du is the word, but what I realized, a lot of those books were ones that I had actually taught in the early and mid 90s to my middle schoolers. Oh. So Jacob Have I Loved, all those Lois Duncan books, I think Marilyn Sachs books, as well. So it was they were in my classroom library on the bookshelves. Yep. So they were still coming of age. I was teaching them and my kids were
Carolyn
checking
Cooney.
Them out. Oh, yeah. Yes.
I have to tell you about Jacob Have I Loved, because Jacob Have I Loved is probably the only young adult coming of age book that I read past seventh grade when I was reading Belva Plaine and Danielle Steele. And well, besides The Outsiders and That Was Then, This Is Now. But I think that The Outsiders and That Was Then, This Is Now, we could have a whole episode about those two books. Mm-hmm. And those were required reading in my language arts class. And when I think back on that now, and I did order That Was Then, This Is Now, because I just had to be like, what were they teaching us? What were we talking about? And it's interesting to reread it and think about the discussions that we had. We talked about grammar. We talked about why is it appropriate to put the wrong grammar in a book? Why would we do that? Okay, but I have to talk about Jacob Have I Loved, because I adored this book. Jacob Have I Loved by Katherine Patterson was about two twin girls who were growing up on an island in Chesapeake Bay. Is that right? Was it Chesapeake Bay?
Yeah, I think so.
It's a very atmospheric story about island living and boys. And one twin was the pretty one and one twin was the smart one. And I remember understanding at that moment that this was a true coming of age book, because it actually ends with an epilogue in adulthood where one of them becomes a midwife. So this happened in college with my friend Colleen. And we went on a spring break trip together with another friend named Martha. We just got in the car and started driving, and we ended up on an island off the East Coast. It wasn't Chesapeake Bay, but it was some random island. And both Colleen and I took in a big breath, and we were like, oh, Jacob Have I Loved? It's Jacob Have I Loved. And we talked about it and exclaimed about it so much that Martha started mocking us. Jacob Have I Loved? Jacob Have I Loved? That's all you guys talk about is Jacob Have I Loved? And so eventually, as adults, Colleen and I end up at a conference where Katherine Patterson is speaking.
Oh my gosh.
And the two of us we're so excited. We're going to tell her the Jacob Have I Loved story. And we go up to her and we tell her the whole thing, and we're going, Jacob Have I Loved? Jacob Have I Loved? You guys, she stared at us like we had two heads.
No.
She was just like, please, will somebody call security for these two women who are going, Jacob Have I Loved? Jacob Have I Loved?
Oh, that's so funny. I hope you got Martha to read it.
No, she would never. No, she's too stubborn. She was Jacob Have I Loved. She's not going to read it now.
I just wrote that down as another one to order. I've ordered four books from Thrift Books. I have now like five more that I'm about to go order. And you guys, we get no, we don't get paid by ThriftBooks. We truly
but they should. They should pay
us. There's some good sites like
that. The other one that I want to point out that I'm not sure was on this list or not, but it does deserve to be on this list, is Summer of My German Soldier, which we actually briefly discussed doing a whole episode on this season. And we decided not to because it doesn't feel right in this time. Anything about the Holocaust feels too close right now
and too dangerous.
And we were like, we don't want to talk about it. But Summer of My German Soldier, just as a reminder, is by Betty Miles. And it was turned into a made-for-TV movie with Christy McNichol. So, of course, we all loved it. We all watched that movie. That was appointment TV. But I think, are we ready for the number one Husker Du title that was on that list?
Mm-hmm,
Shall I just drop it right now? The one I alluded to earlier? Yeah, the one that Michelle has been alluding to. The number one title that made our brains go, Mom, the Wolfman, and Me by, again, Norma Klein, because Norma Klein just couldn't stop writing books that we were reading. The book slapped me so hard in the face. It was written in 1974. It's about an 11-year-old girl named Brett who lives in New York City with her very bohemian, peace-loving artist mother. And I can't tell you in how many times I read that she wore blue jeans. Like, how uncommon must it have been for them to mention in every blurb and every review that the mom wore blue jeans? She's a single parent. She's never been married. And she likes it that way. And Brett likes it that way, too. And in fact, she's really worried that her mom will get married someday and turn normal. This scares her. She doesn't want her mom to turn normal.
She can wear a dress.
Yeah. Oh, God forbid,
slacks.
Slacks. Don't wear slacks. But then Brett meets a guy she calls the Wolfman, who, both because he's like this big beardy dude, but he also has an Irish wolfhound. And suddenly Brett is thinking that she would like her mom and the Wolfman to get closer. I cannot read this book. I could not read this book. It is not available. It is not in print. It's at my library, but it's only available in a special historical collection where you can't check it out. You have to read it in the library.
So I did find a copy used
online, and it has not yet arrived. And I cannot wait to read it.
Me too.
I couldn't wait.
That's the one I ordered that says it's an average condition. I was like, yeah, but it's like $3.
Yeah.
I just need to hold this book again.
Yes.
I know. I love that book. Also, can we just talk about how great that title is?
Mom, the Wolfman.
The Wolfman and Me. How do you not want to read that book?
Right.
I know. This, of course, was also turned into a made-for-TV movie in 1980 and with an all-star cast starring Patty Duke, David Burney, who is Meredith Baxter Burney's husband, also a common Love Boat star, Danielle Brisbois from All in the Family.
Yeah, Archie Bunker.
And also, I just have to throw this out here, apropos of nothing. You all know that she was in the band that did You Get What You Give, that classic one-hit wonder. Did you also know that she co-wrote the songs Unwritten and Pocketful of Sunshine?
No.
By Natasha Bedingfield?
What? All right,
totally
everyone.
Totally serious.
Look at your speakers. The rainbow's coming shooting out right now. The more you know. That's amazing.
Stephanie from All in the Family co-wrote those songs.
That movie, listeners, is available on YouTube. Kind of crappy quality, but doesn't matter.
Watch it.
If you need a good movie to watch, watch Mom, the Wolfman, and Me. Great cast.
And let's just say, Norma Klein, here's my thing. I don't know her story. Like, when were we going to get a mom who had a kid and wasn't married and wore jeans? I mean, this was like, yes.
The impact that she had is unbelievable. I had no idea that so many of her books came out in the 80s. So she just kept on moving. She died tragically very, very young in 1989 when she was only 50 years old.
Oh, what?
I know. Mm-hmm. She was 50.
That's tragic. Holy cow.
I know. And it turns out that Norma Klein was two peas in a pod. Besties, total besties. You're going to totally guess this. You know what the answer is already. With the woman who might be the queen of coming of age books. There is no coming of age without Judy Blume. And Norma and Judy were besties. Where did I learn this fun fact? From a new book that's coming out this week called The Genius of Judy, How Judy Blume Rewrote Childhood for All of Us by Rochelle Bergstein. Now, we have talked about Judy Blume extensively on this podcast. We are dangerously close to becoming a Judy Blume podcast, but that's just because of the outsized impact that she had on our generation.
And she is absolutely responsible for helping millions upon millions of kids feel seen and okay about themselves.
I had some real epiphanies while I was reading this book. It really put some pieces together in ways that I had never thought of before that I went, aha, of course, that makes so much sense.
Yes.
And I love when I have those moments. Mm-hmm. And so it's really informative, but she's such a fun writer. It's just a great read.
It's a really, really fun read. She takes a look at Judy Blume's titles, and she tells you not only what was happening in Judy Blume's life at that moment, but also what was happening in the culture at that moment, mm-hmm. be it the sexual revolution or second wave feminism. What was happening in the schools? What were the attitudes towards sex education in the schools at that moment? And it kind of makes you see that her books were not coming out of nowhere. You can almost take a look at Judy Blume books and use it as a study of that moment in time. And lucky us, we have with us today the author of this jewel of a book, Rochelle Bergstein. Rochelle is an author and an editor whose work focuses on style, pop culture, and families, and has appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, NPR, and more, a lot more. She digs deep and finds meaning in places you may not know to look. Her first book is all about women and shoes. I mean, it's just crazy. And her latest deep dive is on Judy Blume in the book, The Genius of Judy, How Judy Blume Rewrote Childhood for All of Us, which comes out July 16th with great fanfare, I might add. Rochelle Bergstein, welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society. We are so thrilled to see your pretty face.
Welcome.
I am so happy to be here. I love this podcast. I'm so excited to talk to you all.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so excited. I stumbled across this book just looking for some upcoming things this summer. And this was a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I saw the cover and I did a screenshot and sent it to Kristen and Carolyn. I was like, are you guys ready for this book that's coming out this summer? Like, this is right up our alley. I was so excited, Rochelle. And then to have been able to connect with you and now be talking with you is so thrilling.
Yes, for sure.
This is such a good match. It's such an incredibly good match, right? When I started to read this book, I had to reach out to Rochelle and just tell her, I can't put it down. I can't put it down. And I have work to do and I need to put it down. So somebody please help me. It's like she wrote this book just for me. So thank you, Rochelle, for writing this book just for me.
I did. Thank you for saying that.
Kristen, do you want to share it with hopefully like tens of thousands of other people?
I'll sign it for them. Okay, so I need to ask you. So part of the reason that you wrote this book is because you had such nostalgia for Judy Blume. Why do we feel that way? Why is it that, like, universally across generations, not generations, but universally across a generation, basically, we all feel this nostalgia for Judy Blume? What did she do to us?
Well, that's really what I wanted to investigate at this book. You know, selfishly, I wanted to spend as much time with Judy Blume books as possible. Writing a book is a multi-year process, and I thought it would be so fun to revisit her catalog and just read the books with my son, who's 8, and, you know, immerse myself in her story. But my mission with this project was to understand why Judy in particular, compared to some of her contemporaries who were also publishing great books, why just hearing her name is enough to elicit huge smiles and red cheeks and starry eyes. Like, you say Judy Blume to a woman of a certain age, and they're just like, oh my God, I love Judy Blume. So I wanted to answer that question, what it was about her in particular that managed to, you know, penetrate so deep in all of our consciousness. I spend a book trying to answer this question, but I think part of it is the way she spoke so frankly about sex and our bodies and puberty.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of us grew up in homes or went to schools or in communities where talking about those things was still pretty taboo. I mean, it still is today, and that's, you know, a big conversation. But Judy just laid it out on the table, and she did it in a way that made us as young readers feel normal and seen and acknowledged, and that's an unforgettable feeling.
Maybe that is what it is. It made us feel validated, even if we couldn't have identified that in the moment, because we clearly craved whatever she put on the page. We craved it. And we've talked about this before, where it's not profound stuff. She's putting down the simplest of terms in the simplest of language in the way that we spoke. And that's how we were able to hear it, right? Instead of packaging it in a pretty package that was over our heads, she just said it exactly as it was.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And she inserted, you know, these kind of like basic details about bodies and puberty and, you know, menstrual pads and things into stories where all of the other details were just kind of stuff about normal kids.
Right.
Yeah. So a girl like Margaret in Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, she can be worrying about her crush or chatting with her friends about what kind of socks she's going to wear to school at one minute. And then at the next minute, she's begging God to get her period, right. You know? So I think Judy really, she was able to cover the scope of what kids think about in childhood and recognize that it's actually much more complex than kids were often given credit for.
And I think too, and again, we've had a few episodes on Judy Blume books before. So we've probably touched on this, but what you just said, besides being complex, it was also the simplicity of it. And Kristen, you said earlier something about one generation. I would say you corrected yourself when you said generations.
I think it's more because I know my own
kids who are now, you know, late 20s and early 20s, they still get excited if you mention a Judy Blume book. But what I was going to say is that, especially back in the 70s, 80s, if we were even brave enough to act on our curiosities and ask a parent or a teacher or something, you were getting more of a clinical explanation, or you were getting a pamphlet or a book that was more like a textbook. But what Judy Blume did is put us in the story. And so we became those characters. And so when we say we all felt seen, that's, you know, times a million, because we were those people. So all of these situations were happening in the story, just like how they were happening to us, the questions, the things we might be doing in the dark, the, you know, all of this kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't clinical. It was actually just very simple.
Well, everyone always says real. Everybody always says honest. But I think we underestimate the impact that real and honest had on us.
The impacts, and I think the innovation of that, you know, I think that now it seems very obvious to write realistic fiction for young people with real life scenarios and real challenges. Back when Judy started writing in the late 1960s, that was actually more unusual. A lot of the books for children were fantasy books. They were good books. I mean, when you look at like a Roald Dahl book or A Wrinkle in Time, these are great books that hold up, but they're not books about just the daily life and struggles of kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think by putting the daily life and struggles of regular kids on the page, and then also inserting stuff about bodies and sex into those stories, Judy Blume really, again, she touched on the complexity of the human experience of being a pre-adolescent in this really simple, accessible way. I think that's part of the magic, part of the secret sauce.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what I really took away, I loved how you kind of gave us some history and kind of the chronological, timeline of feminism and a woman's role in society, because it really dawned on me, like, we are the first generation to have read these kind of books and felt seen. Our moms, they didn't have that. And so it was almost like, well, of course, like I grew up thinking all of these things that were presented in the book, not that they were these novel ideas. It's like, this is life and I'm a girl and I can do these things. Her characters are so empowered. I think you mentioned that. And I feel like that's what I grew up believing. I didn't have any other, you know, literature that told me differently, I guess, that I held so close to me. It just affected me when I saw the timeline that mm-hmm. we are that first generation to have been given this message, maybe really that we can do anything, we can be anything, even, you know, we're females, but that didn't matter, where I think our moms did not get that message from the culture and society. We were that first group to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I really noticed when I went back to the books as an adult for this project was the way that mothers are portrayed in Judy's books, mm-hmm. and that she was giving us as young readers examples of kind of empowered and disempowered women, mm-hmm. right? So, and it wasn't soapboxy. Judy Blume was almost never up on a soapbox, but she was giving us examples of mothers who were getting in touch with their goals in life, even after having children, or on the other hand, mothers who were a little bit too enmeshed with their kids and maybe had never found their voice. And so I think, yes, as readers, as young people, we're seeing young characters who feel empowered, who stand up for themselves. And then we're also seeing versions of womanhood, both strong and not so strong, that we can kind of choose from.
Mm-hmm. That was so interesting to me, because that had never, ever occurred to me to look to the mothers in those books. And yet that imprinted on us just the same.
I mean, looking at the biographical details of Judy Blume's life, she's kind of living out this story that we're seeing play across the mothers in her books, right? She got married. She got engaged when she was still in college. She had her first child before she graduated. She got a college education, but she wasn't expected to use it. She was from a middle-class Jewish family, and the expectation was that she would marry and have kids and make a beautiful home. And she did all that. And then in her mid to late 20s, she felt very depressed, and she was getting weird skin afflictions and cold symptoms that couldn't be explained. And she realized she needed to get back in touch with her creativity. Her earliest writing teacher, she encouraged her to write realistic fiction. Like, Judy experimented with a lot of different forms. You know, she tried the fantasy thing. She wrote first person, third person. She wrote a little bit of adult fiction. She was trying a lot of stuff, but her writing teacher told her that this was what she was best at.
Oh, wow.
And she just started channeling her young experiences onto the page. So with Margaret, she's literally using things that happened to her in her own life, mm-hmm. you know. Margaret has a group of friends that call themselves the PTSs, the preteen sensations. And Judy was in a group like that. They called themselves the preteen kittens. And they sat around and they talked about their crushes. And they had, I believe it was cat names instead of, you know, glamorous 70s names. But part of Judy's gift was just using real life experience and translating it for kids.
I guess one of the things we'd like to ask you, if you can sum it up, per your title and all the research you did, what do you really think that the genius of Judy Blume is?
So this took me a minute to crack open, and then it really became the idea of this book, which is that Judy Blume translated the messages of second wave feminism in real time for her readers, and thus ensured feminism's longevity.
In us.
Yes.
Yes. In the children.
That was an epiphany for me. Yes. When you put that, mm-hmm. you crystallized it so well. And I was like, yes, yes. How lucky were we, right? Yeah. I mean, like I said, that's first generation to grow up with this knowledge, you know, this information. Like, of course, we didn't know any differently. Oh, that just, yes. So good, Rochelle.
And again, in which she was teaching anything. Right. She was just translating her own experience. She was just being truthful about what she was feeling. And in so doing, was illuminating for us what was happening for women, mm-hmm. right? And then we learn that for ourselves, that women struggle. Women might struggle if they don't have a vocation or if they don't have a creative outlet. And all of that becomes part of our own experience then. It's so much more effective in that truthful way than it is setting out to make a point. That was not what she was doing. She was not out to make a point. She was just telling her story.
Yeah.
Totally. And she's seeing, you know, Susan Brownmiller talk on the news, and she's thinking all of these things about the messages she received growing up and the kind of woman that she became and the kind of woman that her mother was. And she was translating them into children's books and giving us the tools to, you know, stand up and wave that banner one day.
Right. Yeah. And not really know any differently. I mean, I loved that part of it. Yeah. It's like reading these books when we're 8, 9, 10 years old and just absorbing them. Like you said, I mean, that's what we did. We absorbed it. It wasn't like this was such this novel idea. It was, this is the way it is. And how important that was. Again, I mean, serendipity, whatever you want to call it, especially since she wasn't out to do this. Oh my gosh. Isn't that why I would say Gen X women are forced to be reckoned with right now in our culture and society? Well,
it's so true. You know, I see, I was on a hike the other day and there was a little girl, she might've been 4, and she's got an RBG shirt on, you know, walking along. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. So cute. And love it. Right. And I'm reading your book. I'm like, why aren't more people walking around with pictures of Judy Blume on their shirts? I think I'm going to start a line of t-shirts that's just Judy, like even just the outline of her face, because to me, she is my true hero.
And we didn't even know
because
she wasn't teaching us that.
Right. Yeah. We had to become the adult women that we are today to realize the impact that those books and Judy Blume had on who we became today.
Totally. Yes, I totally agree. And what's so fun about that is that, but we knew it all along. We just didn't know we knew it. She was our hero back then. And we didn't know it at the time. And she was the first one to get us in those very early curiosity ages about anything. And I'm not just talking about sex necessarily. It could be a lot of things about why are my parents acting this way? Or why do I feel this way about my friend? Or why is now my friend who was my best friend last year now acting this way towards me? She was the first one to help us tackle some of these other questions that we had and feelings that we had.
Yeah, I think some of Judith's books also, there's kind of a Trojan horse element, right? Like you come to read about Margaret playing 2 minutes in the closet with her crush, but you stay for the stuff about periods, you know? I was so in love with Just As Long As We're Together when I was a kid, which was about complicated friendship dynamics between 3 girls. And I had that experience too. I was like, it's tough to be best friends with 2 girls who are also kind of friends and you get left out. Like 3 is a tough number. But it wasn't until I revisited it as an adult that I was like, oh, this is a book about a child experiencing her parents' divorce. And I experienced my parents' divorce. And I think I love this book so much because the character, Stephanie, is angry. And I was angry. And I didn't really have words for that. So, you know, Judy kind of grabbed us as young readers with all of these things that were fun and relatable and interesting. And then she layered in some really incredible life lessons.
And they weren't heroes. Those kids weren't heroes. They were just regular kids. So when you say that Stephanie got angry, that was not behavior that was really allowed in books previously. The kids were not allowed to be naughty, or have bad feelings about their parents, to say naughty things about their parents. I think about starring Sally J. Friedman. She thinks terrible things about other people. And yet I love her the whole time. I never think that she's a bad kid. She's just a regular kid because that's how kids actually think. And so it was almost like she was giving us permission to just be ourselves. And I love, this is from your book. This is one of the best nuggets in your book, is that the reviews for Sally were really bad and they hurt Judy's feelings horribly, to the point where she took her typewriter and she was going to go throw it into a ravine or something because she had written this horrible, horrible book. Here we are 50 years later, and that is my number one favorite book. Not my number one favorite book of childhood, not my favorite children's book. It's my favorite book. And people reviewed it horribly and she almost stopped writing because of it.
Consistently, Judy's books were poorly reviewed, which is kind of crazy to think about now that we're in the Blumeissance, right? Like everybody loves Judy Blume. But back then, her books were consistently dismissed as junk food. That she was pandering to kids, that she was selling sex, that she wasn't talented. This came up again and again. She's not literary. She's not a good writer. Kids are better off reading the classics than the Judy Blume dribble that their faces are stuck in. You know, she persisted despite that. Yeah. And thank God she did.
Rochelle, I mentioned it in our conversation earlier that I love how your book is organized, how
yeah.
you dive into and a deep dive into her books and backstories about her books, but separated by topics like could be masturbation, divorce, mothers, rebellion, etc. And I just have to read two of my favorite sentences in your entire book. And there were many, but just so our listeners, if you need another reason to run to get this book, in chapter 9, which is masturbation, Rochelle writes this. Let's be clear. Until Deanie, girls didn't masturbate in children's literature. Inventive, now classic characters like Pippi Longstocking and Ramona Quimby were zany and unpredictable, but they certainly never told us where their hands wandered when they were alone. And if you love Judy Blume books and you still love Judy Blume books, this book is a must read.
Yeah.
Yes.
It really is. This book is an education for all of us, whether you're from Gen X or not. And it was so fun to read. I devoured every single word. Rochelle, can we call you again when we inevitably talk about Judy Blume again? Or there's a whole part in the book where you talk about sex education and you talk about those books about where do babies come yes. from. And we have to do an episode on that. You would be a perfect source for that.
That would be fun.
I would love that so much.
There is so much more I want to talk about, but we need to leave some for the reader. So I'm just going to say it right here. Thank you so much, Rochelle, for elevating this topic, for letting us know how important Judy Blume is, that this is the genius of our generation. And thank you for spending time with us today.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
To say the genius of Judy Blume made a huge impact on us. So once again, we are finding out that what we had growing up in the Gen X era was unique. Apparently the books we had as we were coming of age would make up what could be called the golden age of coming of age novels. The pure, honest truth about the realities of life. From My Darling, My Hamburger to Go Ask Alice, from The Outsiders to Mom, the Wolfman and Me, from Sooner or Later to Summer of My German Soldier, from Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret to Deanie and Forever and Blubber and Iggy's House and It's Not the End of the World. We grew up with something special. Do yourself a favor and read these books again and see what it was that drew you in the first time. Thanks so much for being with us today, and we will see you next time.
Today's episode was brought to you by, of course, Norma Klein and Judy Blume and Rochelle Bergstein, but also by all the wonderful people who take their support of our podcast to the next level and have joined our Patreon. And today we are giving a special thank you to Shannon, Jen, Teresa, Diane, Colette, Kelly, Barbara, Elaine, Charles, Heather, Jill, Angela, Julie, Aaron, Amy, and Anor.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
That's a lot of people.
I know. Yes, you guys. Thank you all so thank much. You. That means so much to us. It really does. And a special thank you to our guest, Rochelle Bergstein. Remember her book, The Genius of Judy, How Judy Blume Rewrote Childhood for All of Us, comes out this week. So run to your local bookstore or to bookshop.org and order your copy today.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. To good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie. Cheers.
Cheers.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu, nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.